Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, I am uber excited. I have an excellent guest today. He's calling in from somewhere up in the mountains in Colorado. He's kind of in a zen place today. His name is Mark Babbitt, and he's with WorkIQ. Hey, Mark, man, how are you doing?
Hi, Brian. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Awesome, man. And I really appreciate you coming on today. We're going to be talking about good, but we'll get to that in a minute. I first want to know, how did you go from cleaning up nursing home bathrooms to cleaning up corporate mindsets?
Oh, what a strange question, Brian. So when I was a kid, still in high school, my sister, who was studying to be a nurse, she was working at a nursing home. And came home one day and said, "Hey, my company's looking for a maintenance man, and I, you know, you're really good with your hands. I suggested you come and interview tomorrow." And I did, and I got the job, and I was so thrilled. I'd been a paper boy since I was 8, but this is like my first real job at, I don't know, 15 and a half or whatever it was. Well, Brian, and on my very first day, I learned in the first 30 minutes that maintenance man was nursing home speak for cleaning up bathrooms of people who weren't in full function of their facilities. So it was, I still did it for a year and a half. And every day I would come home and say, "That's it. That's my last day." And the next day morning I would get up and go to work again. So it was a humbling experience for sure, but I got to meet so many neat people and hear so many great stories. And I apply that today. I love sitting down with storytellers, veterans, and people who lived in a much different time, and it's pretty easy to apply that to business today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I love the way you turned a crappy job into a learning experience. I think,
yeah, literally crappy.
Really,
but you know, back then, Brian, we didn't know any better, right? A job was a job, and we weren't supposed to be following our passion and all that. You know, we earned some money. We did our job well, we hope, and that's the way things were way back then.
Yeah, and you know, it's a work ethic thing. I mean, my first job, I worked in a shoe store. I knew nothing about shoes, you know, but it taught me a lot of great lessons. So today we want to talk about defining what good means, and you know, you've seen the book Good to Great and all this other stuff, but you know, good, like art, is a relative term. So let's start out there. What does good mean?
So it means so many different things to so many different people, Brian. In the corporate world, it for a long time, and Good to Great was a great example of this. It was corporate success. And specifically what made some companies just good and what made other companies great. And that's not what we're working on right now. We're along with Chris Edmonds, I'm working on a book called Good Comes First. And Good Comes First to us is literally about placing human values on the same pedestal as results. And it's kind of retro, but it's also revolutionary, especially with what's going on in the world today. And geez, what would happen if we actually put good first, the doing of good first? Well, to do that, we have to define that. And that's our struggle is, you know, to some people, if we go to a boardroom, they're going to all talk about results and competition and market share and profits and value to the shareholders. But if we go to the people two floors down on the floor, good to them means I'm home every day to have dinner with my kids, or my employer was incredibly flexible during this latest crisis and not only allowed me to work from home, but made it possible. That was good to them, right? So it's just so different to everybody. And then you throw in the faith-based version of good and the athletic version of good. It's just so different for everybody.
And their whole life revolves around what happens after work. Work is a means to live a life, where my parents, work was the life. You know, it was how you got the things that you needed, because they grew up in the Depression era. So, you know, work ethics are vastly different. Values are vastly different. What are you finding, especially now with this, you know, changing landscape right now with people working from home and, you know, having to balance not only work and home life in a more, you know, intense, you know, in your face kind of way? From a corporate standpoint, are leaders getting that? Are leaders beginning to understand it? Or is this something they're figuring out for themselves now?
You know, most leaders are getting it, Brian. Reluctantly, some of them, this was not their choice. It was not the plan to send people home to work. We still wanted to enforce the command and control autocratic nature of that we all learned in the industrial age, or at least people of a certain age learned back then. We referred to that, Brian, as boomer male syndrome, BMS.
BMS.
And we were taught, I'll be 60 this summer, we were taught to lead in a certain way, to run our businesses in a certain way. And now this crisis occurs and we can't be in the same building anymore. We can't micromanage. We can't auto control. And it's been a real wake up call. And I will tell you, many leaders are absolutely embracing it. And they're seeing how hard it was for people to balance their home lives, and not just kids for some, but significant others in their own career trajectories, elderly parents at home, fur babies at home. Now we're homeschooling, but I have this report due at 1 o'clock to my boss, but class goes from 12:30 to 1:30, and now, you know, what do I do? And leaders saw, for many, perhaps for the first time, that this life was just this weird balancing act, and people had to pay their bills. Getting back to your comment earlier about, you know, how do we make life work? We make life work by working. And we were over-prioritizing work to a significant degree. And now the good that's come out of it is that people are going, you know what, I can be a productive, valuable member of my work community, but I can also be dad and mom and son and daughter and neighbor. And it's brought us back to a time where there was balance, and we did things like barn raising, and we just showed up just to show up. We just showed up just to do good. And so if nothing else comes out of this weird time that we're living in, we hope it's that.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing from you is, you know, the good, it's almost like you have to look at the culture around you within the company or the sphere that you're working. Say you're an entrepreneur and you're a solopreneur, you're the sphere of people around you and what they define as good. So it's almost like, I think the answer lies in the questions that you ask the people that you're serving, but then also having a heart that says, I'm serving these people, they're serving us, we're in this as one. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And if you go down back, let's go back down to that second floor for a minute, and you do this rah-rah speech over pizza Friday at lunchtime. This is how great profits are, and how we just closed these three real big deals, and you give it the whole corporate speak thing. Well, the employers are enthused. It means job security to them. But at the same time, they're thinking, oh my God, 3.5 more hours till happy hour. And it's Friday and I just want to go home. And Monday I know will come too soon. And so they're listening to the corporate speak, but we never gave them the opportunity to apply that to them and their values and their standards. And we never asked them the really simple questions like, hey, you know, the good news is we closed these three deals. We'd like to ask you what made that possible. We want to know what is working for you and what is not. And we want to know what you like about working here and what you don't. Nobody asks those questions. And to this day, it's really hard even now to ask those questions because we're not face-to-face with people. But our hope is that we're actually going to ask people to define their version of good when we start to come out of this, and we're not just going to resort back to our or revert back to our last normal. We're actually going to try and make our next normal that much more productive and fulfilling.
So that brings up something, you know, it's like one of the things, and again, you talk about spirituality a little bit, and you always look for the good in something. And I think the difference here is you not only have to look for the good, but you have to ask about the good. You have to get feedback on the good in order to better understand how to capitalize on that. Would you say that's kind of the angle you're taking?
Well, that's it exactly. We are known for talking at people, especially in the workplace. We don't talk with people. We talk at people. And that's how cultures were built. And that's how the entire 130-year-old industrial age worked. We traded man hours for dollars. And if you weren't happy here, fine, go somewhere else. And it wasn't until the millennials that you spoke of earlier, Brian, stood up and said, wait a minute, there's more to life than this. I don't want just to trade man hours and expertise for dollars. I actually want to do meaningful work. I want to make a difference. I want to enjoy this process. I want to enjoy the people I work with. I want to respect and trust my leaders. And thank God the millennials, out of all the generations, you know, before mine and now after, they were the ones to stand up and say, no, this is not good enough. This is, and some would just come out and say, when we started doing research for this book, Brian, the popular thing was, well, what does good look like? And I didn't ask you if I could swear on your show, so I won't, but,
thank you.
but the answer quite often was, I don't know what it is yet, but I know this blank isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all still defining that. And until we have those conversations and we ask the right questions and we're active listeners, when the answers come back at us, we don't know how people define good. We don't know if their personal values align with our business values. We don't know if they're in the right place for them at this moment. And those are the questions we have to ask.
Yeah, there's so much emphasis in business put on the mission and vision statement. You know, it's the mission statement and the vision statement and all this kind of fun stuff. And millennials have gotten a bad rap because we grew up, you and me are about the same age. We grew up in a time where my dad got a gold watch for staying with the same company for 40 years, and that work ethic was appreciated. And then it got to the point where companies started treating their employees more as expenditures. You know, this is how much it cost me to get this employee, but I can get three employees for the same price, so I can get three people to fill that. And then the millennials came in and said, wait a minute, we don't care. Bottom line is, if you make me unhappy, I'm just going to go to company B and I'll go to company C. And they got a bad rap because they moved from company to company to company. And the companies were so invested in training and, you know, getting them to follow the corporate speak and the culture and all this other stuff. They'd invest all this money and the people would leave. And they're still like, what are you doing? Right. But I think really what it boils down to is we've got to rethink this and we've got to make it so that our culture attracts people and we don't diss them for saying they're happy or they're not happy, you know? So we have to be able to adapt a little bit more to the way that the world is now, as opposed to trying to squeeze that square peg into a round hole. What do you think?
Well, I think, Brian, that there is nothing more valuable than sincere, constructive input in the workplace. And to most leaders, again, we'll get back to those old white guys again, to most of them, there is nothing scarier than deliberate, sincere, I care, I want to be here, but this isn't working for me input. And it takes leaders completely out of their comfort zones. And because we weren't listening, then millennials were, and now Gen Zs, they're being labeled as job hoppers. Well, I tried to make it better. You didn't listen. It was your way or get out. And so I got out. I accepted your invitation to leave. But the really great companies, they're not just they're not just listening. They're actually out there. And I'm not talking, by the way, those silly pulse surveys, and I'm not talking about the manipulative structure that surrounds quote unquote employee engagement. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about random acts of leadership and the CEO down in the break room on that second floor, pouring cups of coffee in the morning saying, so how's it going? What are you working on? What challenges are you facing? I saw your car in the parking lot late last night. What were you doing here so late? How can I help? And it's those kind of moments, those random acts of leadership that just make a world of difference. And not just to millennials and not just to Gen Z, but to people your age and my age that didn't know we that was even an option, right? We're just head down doing our jobs. Yes, we feel good about it most of the time, but we kind of do what we're told. That's how we were raised. And now we're sitting around talking to the CEO around a cup of coffee, and it wasn't planned, and we're having a real conversation. Where did that come from?
Right.
And those are the leaders that are making a big difference today.
Yeah, I remember working at AT&T and working with the leader of the division that I was in, who was in the building. And then, the CEO from New York would come out and was like, you must fear and respect this person. And I was getting badgered because, I'd walk up to the VP and I'd say, hey, Beth, how you doing? What's happening? She, oh, everything's great. There was that relational kind of thing. I remember being a little bit of a rogue, but the one thing that you said to me that just really rang a bell was random acts of leadership. And that is getting down and understanding what's happening in the business based on the people. There was, I think it was the CEO, and I cannot remember his name, of ServiceMaster, who used to actively basically go put on a janitor's uniform and clean hospital rooms. Talk about going full circle to your original story. But he would go there so that he could experience what his employees had to feel and what they were doing, and also understand the meaning to the customers that they were serving. So he got a perspective from the employee side, he got it from the customer side, and it made him a better leader. And I think that's really kind of the essence of what you're talking about.
Well, it is. And we spend a lot of time as leaders in our ivory towers and in our in New York and Los Angeles and in our company cars, and and we kind of lost touch with what good means to different people. And your ServiceMaster example is a great example of somebody who was humble enough to get out there and just do random things, the random things that mattered. So he wasn't hearing it through 8 levels of management, and things weren't all filtered and spun towards it's all rosy, and he lived it. He did it. And that's what we're asking leaders to do. 'Cause we as authors, we as consultants, we as businessmen, you and I on this phone call today, we can't define what good means for anybody other than ourselves. And heck, even in our homes, what is good to me is much different than my 13-year-old son and his definition of good, right? And so we have to be willing to ask those hard questions in order to actually do good.
Well, without getting political, but I have to say it, Mark, you're making good great again. And this was fabulous. I love the perspective. I love the, like I said, random acts of leadership just resonated with me because it shook me to the core. So I know I want to follow you more. If people wanted to get in touch with you or follow you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I'm still 10 years later, I'm still on social media quite a bit, Brian, as you know. So you can find me at Mark S. Babbitt on either Twitter or Facebook. And we hear all my companies, we still answer all of our own emails. So you can also reach me at mark.babbitt@workiq. That's workiq.com.
Awesome sauce. Well, I know you're working on a few books. I'll be following you. Mark, I appreciate you coming on and dropping some sizzling hot bacon knowledge bombs on my peeps. And this has been fabulous, man. It's great getting to know you. I look forward to having you back again, talking a little deeper on this subject.
I would enjoy that very much, Brian. Thank you.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.